All right, Alexander, let's do an update on Ukraine. And I think the big story to talk about is Bakhmut. The New York Times ran an article last week about the casualties in Bakhmut, Russian and Ukrainian. And the interesting part is that they highlighted the Ukrainian casualties, which you don't usually get from the collective West mainstream media. So that is the big story, to be quite
It
honest,
is.
is Bakhmut. I mean, there's
It
fighting in all other areas, which you
absolutely
document well on your channel, but I think for this video we should
focus
focus
on
in
Bakhmut.
on Bakhmut.
Absolutely, I completely agree. By the way, that was an interesting article in the New York Times. There's also been an interesting article in the Daily Telegraph, by the way. Tries to take a more, shall we say, encouraging perspective of the fighting from the Ukrainian point of view. But he talked about how the fighting is similar to that in the First World War. It showed Ukrainian soldiers in trenches. It spoke about the Ukrainians suffering heavy casualties as well. And you can take it from both of these articles that things are not going well for Ukraine in Bakhmut. And in fact, over the last 24 hours, and I'm sure you've been picking up on this as well, there's been reports that a whole string of places in and around Bakhmut have been falling one after the other before the advance of, well, they always say the Wagner forces, but I gather that more Russian troops are now involved. Now, this battle for Bakhmut has been going on for 4 months, and there have been other times when it looks like we're getting close to its culmination. And it has turned out that, the Ukrainians have been able to throw in more troops. They've been able to hold the line. They've been able to keep some kind of communications open, something like that. And of course, it could be that they will pull off something again. But I have to say that the accumulation of evidence over the last 24 hours does suggest that, we're now past the tipping point, that the situation of the Ukrainian forces in Bakhmut is now becoming difficult to the point of being untenable, and that it's perhaps starting to look like, a progressive collapse of resistance there. And just to say, this is a huge battle. It's been going on, as I said, for 4 months. Casualties have been enormous. Casualties that the Ukrainians have been suffering. All the reliable reports, including, of course, that one from the New York Times, have been confirming that the Ukrainian casualties have been extraordinarily high and disproportionately high, far higher than the Russian. And that suggests that this is seen by Ukraine. Bakhmut is seen by Ukraine as a linchpin in its defenses in Donbass. And I've seen some suggestions that Bakhmut in Donbass, in Donetsk region, is similar to Popasnaya. Do you remember Popasnaya in Lugansk region? When the Russians captured Popasnaya, the whole Ukrainian position in Lugansk progressively and quite rapidly started to collapse. We had eventually Severodonetsk and Lysychansk falling under Russian control, and this was all the direct product of the fall of Popasna. And it's been suggested to me that Bakhmut is the same, that if Bakhmut falls, we're going to start to see a progressive collapse of all the various Ukrainian positions in Donetsk region, which, if true, would mean the end, the effective end of the Battle of Donbass, the greater Battle of Donbass, which has been underway since May. Now, Popasna took 2 months to capture, much smaller place than Bakhmut. Bakhmut's 4 months on. Perhaps we're close to that point now.
Is Bakhmut as significant as it was 4 months ago, or has it lost its significance?
I don't think it's lost its significance. I think it's every bit as significant now as it was 4 months ago. I mean, if you look at where it is, it's apparently the hub of the whole transportation network. Control of Bakhmut has enabled the Ukrainians to keep their various troops communicating with each other and supplied. And it's also the center of the sort of big remaining defense line, called, by the way, by some people, the Zelensky line, after Ukraine's president. If it falls, that whole line collapses, a line that reaches all the way from Marinka and Avdiivka, which are towns, two settlements near Donetsk, all the way to Seversk in the north. That collapses. The only thing left then is Kramatorsk and Slavyansk as the two big remaining towns under Ukrainian control in Donbass. And it seems that they're much less defendable than Bakhmut is.
How significant is it that Bakhmut was or is about to be won by the Wagner group?
Well, this is, I think, one of the more interesting things, because, of course,
we've called this the war inside. This is Wagner's little war inside
the war. Exactly. The big war, yeah. Exactly. And in fact, there was a very interesting statement by Prigozhin, who is the founder, or at least the self-proclaimed founder of the Wagner Group, and he's explained why did this battle take so long, and he said, well, the Ukrainians have been defending themselves well there, they built lots of fortifications, it's not an easy place to capture, all of which is true. And he also said, you know, that it's always important to remember that, you know, we're not really interested in Bakhmut itself so much. We have been wanting to inflict the greatest number of casualties on the Ukrainians that we can, and we've turned it into a meat grinder and all that, all of which no doubt is true. But it did come across to me as rather defensive, Prigozhin's words. And I wonder whether, in truth, what happened was that the Wagner group bit off more than they could chew. They tried to be the people, you know, 4 months ago who were going to take Bakhmut all by themselves. They weren't able by themselves to prevail against the best forces of the Ukrainian army who were deployed there. And whether what's actually happened and why we've now started to see this apparent progressive collapse of Ukrainian defences is that the new commander of the Russian forces, Suravikin, who's been the first overall commander the Russians have appointed of their forces in Ukraine, is starting to commit more and more troops, as well as the Wagner group, to capturing Bakhmut. And in fact, I've seen a sort of table of some of the Russian forces that are involved. And it's now clear that the Wagner group has now, from being the sort of lead force, it's only one of them. And that this is why the Russians are making sudden progress, is because they finally gained that critical mass. And if that's correct, then I can see why Prigozhin might be sort of trying to defend what the Wagner group has been doing. He might be saying, well, you know, we did a wonderful job. We weakened the Ukrainians. We caused them huge losses, even if we weren't able to take Bakhmut by ourselves. And he also said, and it was a very sort of elliptical comment at the end, that, you know, silence precedes happiness. In other words, that good news is coming. So it would be a big win for the Wagner group if Bakhmut falls, because it's been so associated with them. It will be a boost for Prigozhin himself. But perhaps the reality is that one of the reasons the battle has lasted as long as it has is that the Wagner group has tried to fight it as their private war. And perhaps the reason it's now ending is because the regular Russian military is now taking a much bigger hand in it than had previously been the case.
Okay, the fact that the collective West is now reporting on Bakhmut, and you pretty much had months of radio silence, but all of a sudden they've taken an interest in Bakhmut, to me is confirmation that Bakhmut is about to fall to the Russians. I don't want to say it's 100%. I don't want to say it's 100% or inevitable, but it does seem like it appears inevitable when you get stories, a bunch of stories coming out of the collective West about Bakhmut. It's like they're prepping the public for what's about to come. Exactly. Outside of Bakhmut, there are rumors of, and these were rumors that went around over the weekend, that were going around over the weekend about Zaporozhye and the ZMPP, rumors that were denied by the Russian government, by the Ministry of Defense, that ZMPP was taken over, or was under attack, was about to be taken over. But there is a lot more talk about an offensive towards the ZMPP. And there are some rumors, and I want to stress the Russian Ministry of Defense, the government, everybody, they've denied this. There are rumors of a Russian retreat from the ZNPP.
What do you make of that? Yes. I don't think this is going
to... These are just rumors.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Now, I mean, you know, always, you know, the Russians have shown in the past that they're prepared to withdraw from places that they don't want to hold. And we saw that with Kherson region, for example. We saw that previously in Kharkiv. Now, in Kherson region, the Russians signaled for some time before they did withdraw, they signaled the possibility that they might withdraw. And they never denied that they were considering the possibility of withdrawal. Now, with the Zaporozhye nuclear power plant, they have categorically denied that they are planning to withdraw. So given that they are categorically denying that, I don't think they have any intention of doing it. And I don't think that it makes much military sense. I don't think they would want to increase the areas of Ukraine's control east of the Dnieper River. I think they feel comfortably, you know, positioned, defending it. And all the indications I've heard about is that Russian defences in this part of the Ukraine, the conflict area, are extremely strong and becoming stronger all the time. So I don't think that they're going to pull back. As I said, when they have withdrawn in the past, as in Kherson region, they didn't deny that they were planning to do it, and they gave indications that they were considering it. This time, they've categorically denied it, so I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay, a couple of more topics to wrap it up. And then if you have any other topics that you want to talk about in this Ukraine update. The first question I have is, once again, rumors, but people are talking about it, so we can bring it up, which is a Ukraine offensive towards Russia, Belgorod, up there. What are the possibilities of that, do you think? And actually not Belgorod, a town a little bit closer to the border.
I think I don't know
the name of.
Yes, I know. I don't think whether I don't.
Because
it's an
SV.
I know. Yeah. I know the place you mean, and I can't remember its name either. But you know, I'm going to say straight away, I don't know whether that is what the Ukrainians are actually planning to do. But there are reports that, in fact, the bulk of the Ukrainian forces that had previously been in Kherson region have now been redeployed to Kharkiv region, to this particular area. And I get the impression that the Russians are taking this threat very seriously indeed, and that they've been moving troops into this area, precisely this area. And of course, because it's Russia, it's Russian territory, they're able to move conscripts, actual, you know, serving conscripts into this area as well, in order to build up and beef up the defences. So it's the kind of thing I can imagine the Ukrainians doing. I mean, it would, you know, if they could seize some actual Russian territory, well, it would give, you know, them big political boost. It's the sort of thing that might be, you know, give them lots of dramatic publicity. They might think that they can trade some of this territory for territory that the Russians have captured, though I think that's most unlikely that that's what the Russians would do. But I can imagine the Ukrainians doing it, and they are building up forces in this particular area. So I think that a major Russian priority will be to make sure that doesn't happen.
I mean, that's an invasion of Russia. I mean, just to
be absolutely.
Clear.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what we're talking about. Ukraine invading.
Yes,
yeah,
of course it would be. One wonders what the Western powers will think of that, because, of course, it would be, as you correctly said, an invasion of Russia itself. be a massive escalation. But I can imagine Zelensky and his government and his, you know, leadership doing something like this. And I have to say, I think the Russians are taking this very seriously indeed. All the indications I've seen is that this is something that the Russians are genuinely concerned about and that they are now anxious to beef up their defences in Belgorod. By the way, it's also, I think, hardened the opinion of a lot of people in Russia that the pullback from Izium was a mistake. The general view in Russia is that the pullback from Kherson city was justified, that the Ukrainian forces have been pinned down in Kherson city, that they're subjected to heavy shelling, that Ukrainian control of Kherson city is extremely fragile and tenuous. I've even been reading articles in The Guardian, of all places, which suggest that the Russians are in such a strong position that they might even retake Kherson city fairly soon. I don't believe that, by the way. But that pullback was justified. The pullback from Izium was a mistake because it has exposed Belgorod to attack. And there's more talk that, you know, we've got to go back. We've got to recapture places like Kupiansk, Izium, that we gave Balaklia, which we gave up during the Ukrainian offensive in September, because doing that is exposing Belgorod and, you know, Russian core Russian territories to this kind of threat. So it might be that over the next couple of weeks, months, sometime, you know, some of those Russian forces might be acting to, you know, not just repel Ukrainian offensives, but might be going on an offensive in this area themselves.
Yeah, I imagine doing something like that, the goal of it is to maybe somehow affect some sort of regime change in the Kremlin. Yes. or something like that to happen. I imagine that would be the effect of doing that in Kiev's mind.
This is exactly correct. We've discussed this before. I mean, ultimately, this is the only path Ukraine has to victory, it seems to me. And not just Ukraine, but all its Western sponsors. There was one particular day last week when I was just astonished at how many articles had appeared, all one after the other, in the British media, all hoping, wishing, praying, looking forward to Putin's fall. There was one in The Economist, one in The Guardian by Timothy Garden Ash, one in The Daily Telegraph by Con Coughlin. I want others as well. And they're all coming out all about the same time, because that is the only way, ultimately, that they can achieve their objectives in this war. So capturing some Russian territory, embarrassing the Kremlin, creating a crisis like that, and, you know, it might be the way that, you know, the throw that they have, the last throw that they have. And I can see what they might do it. And as I said, I think the Russians are taking the risk of it very seriously indeed.
All right. And the final story that we could talk about, that we could touch upon is there's been a lot of news about Polish casualties in Ukraine. I don't want to overdo it, because some of these reports coming out, I don't know, they don't seem too reliable for me. Some of the numbers seem a little too out of whack, but there definitely is, out of all the collective West countries, the largest presence is probably Poland. Whether you're talking about mercenaries or just anything else, the largest presence is probably a Polish mercenary or NATO military, whatever, in Ukraine. What do you make of the talk now that is coming up regarding Polish soldier casualties or mercenary casualties in Ukraine? And I've actually thought of this, that even mercenary casualties, even though being a mercenary in Poland, I believe, is illegal, but even the casualties of Polish mercenaries, you are talking about Polish citizens. And I've thought to myself, eventually it is going to hit a number as this war progresses where people in Poland, everyday citizens, are going to take notice I mean, I think that's just a thought that just comes to mind, that sooner or later people are going to say, well, you know, I know a friend of a friend of a friend who knows someone who's in Ukraine and something happened to him. I mean, that's bound to happen.
I think we are already there with this. Like yourself, I don't want to sort of throw around numbers because I don't know how reliable these numbers are. But that there are a lot of Polish people fighting on the Ukrainian side, whether they've gone as volunteers, which is what the Polish government wants us to think, whether they're actually been ordered to go there in some way, and that they're connected with the Polish armed forces. I mean, I'm not going to try and guess or speculate about in this programme, but there have been a lot of Poles in the conflict area. They have suffered casualties. There is talk about this in Poland. The Polish government is sensitive and nervous about those discussions. And I know it is also sensitive about the fact that Poland has sent so much of its military equipment to Ukraine. And a lot of it apparently has now been lost. So I think you're absolutely right. I think it is only a question of time before this becomes a big issue in Polish domestic politics. Now, the big question is, and I can't answer this, is what the effect that will be on Poland when that happens. Will it galvanise Polish opinion to oppose the war? Or will it, on the contrary, strengthen feeling that, you know, Poland is somehow committed to this conflict and that it needs to keep the war going and that the moment has now come to come clean about it and to sort of issue a general call for volunteers? My instinct overwhelmingly points towards the first, but, you know, I, given the history, I can't say I'd be completely surprised if it was the second.
All right. Any other topics?
Yeah, what I want to say is this. Yeah, the one thing I want to say is just a summary now, and we come back to Bakhmut. Nobody should be under any doubt that the major battle that's been fought in Ukraine right from the start of this conflict has been in Donbass. Now, we've been saying this in program after program. Way back in March, when the Russians were still camping outside Kiev, we were saying, you know, people are just over-focused on Kiev. We're over-focused on other places. Donbass is where this war is really being fought and where it's going to be won or lost if over the next weeks, months, however long it takes, the Russians are able to break Ukrainian resistance in Donbass, advance to the east bank of the Dnieper, and apparently if they take Donbass, there's nothing significant to stand in their way between Donbass and the east bank of the Dnieper. Well, that will be a decisive moment. That will probably be the decisive moment in the war. Ukraine would lose its most important industrial region. It would lose the most heavily fortified area of Ukraine. And of course, the entire strategic balance of the war would shift completely. So what happens in Bakhmut matters. It may be a smaller place than, say, Kherson City was, but Bakhmut does matter. And if Bakhmut falls and all of these other places start, like Slavyansk, Kramatorsk, all the rest, fall as well, then be under no illusions that will mark a fundamental change in the whole character of the war. We will no longer be in this grinding siege warfare type conflict. We will be moving into something altogether more dynamic.
All right, we will leave it there, the Duran.locals.com, everybody. And we are on Rockfin as well. And go to the Duran shop, 10% off. Use the code GOODDAY. Take care.